Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. The calls have continued for the government to reconsider allowing EPF contributors one last 10,000 ringgit drawdown. This in light of the recent floods and slow economic recovery from the pandemic. In fact, UMNO Youth claimed that based on a survey they did, 97% of the respondents had wanted a further 10,000 ringgit withdrawal. Now, we reached out to proponents of the EPF withdrawals. However, none of them were willing to come on the show today. But let's speak to our first guest, Professor Emeritus Dato' Norma Manso. She's director of University of Malaya's Social Wellbeing Research Centre, which recently concluded a survey on the use of withdrawals from iLestari and iSinar during the COVID-19 pandemic. Prof. Norma, thanks for joining us on the show. I want to talk to you about this this question about whether EPF depositors should be allowed to withdraw their savings to deal with the current, crisis. Many of them calling for this one final drawdown. So I wonder what you make of calls like this.
Good evening, Melissa and Sharad. Thank you for having me. Yeah, it's been a very difficult 2 years for us. It's not just a pandemic, but also the flood to top it up. Yeah, so yes, the withdrawals and the support, the financial support from the government have been very useful for Malaysians in general, especially for the low income. But calling for further withdrawals from the EPF savings is something that has to be discussed and be careful. Yeah, because as is, I think the Minister of Finance have shared that how a big majority of the contributors have very low savings. So you're talking about 6 million having less than 10,000 in their savings, yeah? And about 4 million of the contributors have less than 1,000. And you're talking about from an active members of contributors, active contributors, about 8 million. 8 to 9 million altogether, yeah? So we're talking about a big majority with very little savings. And the data also shows that the profile of the withdrawals have been coming, or rather heavy, from the 35-year-olds to 40-year-olds, yeah? So they seem younger, but you consider this, that the median income, yeah, that's the title of your show. Yeah, the median income imputed by EPF, because EPF do not have the wage schedule with them, yeah, wage data, but from the contributions, they calculated that the median income is about 2,000 ringgit a month, yeah. So for an income earners of 2,000 ringgit a month, and if we bring back the contribution when the economy gets better, got the contribution back to its original pre-COVID, pre-flood, which is about 23% total. Yeah. So if they work until 60 years old, 20 years after the, we have contributed fully, then they will get a savings of about 120 or so thousand altogether. So as the EPF has done some rough work, that you will need a minimum of 240,000 by the time you retire in order for you to draw down about 1,000 ringgit a month. Yeah. So therefore, for those who have, if their income is about 2,000 ringgit, and when they retire, they probably can withdraw 500 ringgit a month. So what the implication of this, Melissa, would be that Malaysians just cannot afford to retire. Yeah. So we just have to work for as long as we live, or we have to work for as long as we can. So that's the implication of this. I know that out there are a lot of concerns about how they conduct their daily lives. And I think this is where the public funds, the government should come in, yeah,
Professor, if I can ask you to kind of make reference to the research that was done, why did you, your center, decide on looking at the use of withdrawals? What was it that you were trying to discover in this survey?
Okay, we tried to, this survey was to investigate what is the usage of the withdrawals that they have made. And we have, I think the data is shared, and you can also download the article, that majority of them, about 70% of those, are used it for their daily expenses, yeah? And these are from the low income. But about 50% of the withdrawals is not for are for those whose income are not reduced and do not lose their jobs. What it means is that they are looking for alternative investments as well. Yeah. So 50% of them that withdraw from the Ayla Starry and ICNR programs do not necessarily are not necessarily those who lose their jobs or who are whose income were reduced. So which means that Malaysians in general, it's hard for them, I mean, a big majority of Malaysians, they find it difficult to meet their daily needs. Yeah, so this is something that need a wider discussion of looking at the structural issues in this country. Sure.
Could I get you to clarify, Prof. Noma? So what this means is the fact that many of the withdrawals from Ayla Starry ICNR didn't lose their jobs, didn't have a reduction in income, but used that money to supplement their daily living. So there was a lot of hand-wringing about whether people who would take up money from EPF would, you know, put it in, invest in gold or do other things with that money. But what are you? What did your survey find? Was it really about supplementing financial difficulties or financial obligations during a pandemic?
Okay, if I can break it down, yeah? Mm-hmm. More than half of the respondents have withdrawn their income from account, withdrawn from account two, and about 5,000 to 6,000ringgit, yeah? Which is the maximum limit allowed, yeah? And 59% withdrawals are made by younger people. However, 50% of the withdrawal comes from those who did not experience any change in employment or work in the last 12 months. So you would expect that a bigger percentage of those withdrawing are for those who either lose their jobs or their income were reduced, yeah? But it is not so. So we suspect that for this group, they withdraw for their daily activities, no doubt. There are two implications from this data. Number one, is that they do not have enough to spend, to expend on their daily activity, on their living, yeah? Mm-hmm. And secondly, some of them would withdraw regardless whether they lose their jobs or not, because they would also want to invest in other right. types of investments, yeah? Be it unit trust or you name it, yeah.
So Professor Norma, is there, I don't know if your survey captured this, but a commitment to the EPF system? And do you think most Malaysians who are part of it, and not all people who work are part of it, but to the extent that they are part of it, do they feel that this is actually something that's good for them, that they that when withdrawing, they themselves are concerned about how it might impact them in the long run? Is there any kind of forward thinking among Malaysians who are participants in EPF that you could tell? I mean, is there such a sentiment?
Maybe among the younger people, but I think for those who live longer, those who are older, yeah, more advanced in age,
the like myself,
has allowed, yeah. You are not included in this, I'm sure. have allowed EPF withdrawals and to be invested in unit trust and all that in somewhere in year 2000, yeah. And as you know, that unit trust, the return were erratic. It's not necessarily steady, whereas with the EPF, the return is steady and compounded on top of that. So many reinvested in the EPF. So I think there could be some of the contributors out there who feel that the alternative investment is better, but as evidence shown or history has shown, that is not necessarily so. So I think allowing for withdrawals when we have a major crisis is very dangerous, because our population, as I think many would know by now, that is aging very rapidly. Yeah, and also we had a disaster in 2014. We had the flood in 2014, and that was not, EPF was not touched. Yeah, and one other aspect that I think I would like to share is that some people say, oh, in other countries they do allow withdrawals, yeah, from the pension fund or loans from the pension fund, etc. But we also have to know our social protection structure in this country. In many countries, they have this old age pension, yeah, or old age retirement income, where it is universal. Everyone is entitled. Yeah, especially in the OECD countries, everyone, and Thailand has it too now, and Vietnam has it too, that everyone is entitled to a very small basic pension or basic retirement income. Whereas we don't have that. For us, we are talking about proposing to the government to look into having the multi-layer retirement income, that at least for the floor, yeah, the social protection floor, at least there is a universal social pension that every Malaysian should be entitled to. Therefore, if your retirement savings is not as big, you're able to at least survive, yeah? And then you get incomes or remittances from your family members or your passive savings or your retirement savings, such as the EPF or government pension, what have you, yeah? So that would add on or to be the next layer of income that we should have. And I think Malaysia, moving forward, we are on the cusp of becoming a high-income nation. So this is something that we should talk about, the economic structure of the country, where, you know, wages are still very low, therefore savings are low, but also on the social protection retirement income structure. Going forward, it is not sustainable the way we are leading now. I mean, everyone should contribute to the social protection system. But how we do it is the big debate, or it should be a national forum for that.
I think that would be a great conversation to have on another another episode. I think a longer conversation would delve deeper into that. But we want to thank you so much, Prof. Noma, for joining us on the show today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
That was Professor Emeritus Datuk Noma Mansor from UM's Social Wellbeing Research Centre. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this. We will be back with more on this topic. Stay tuned. Hi, thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. If you've just joined us on the show, we're discussing those continuous calls by UMNO Youth and other NGOs to allow EPF contributors one last drawdown of 10,000 ringgit. This in light of the recent floods and also the slow economic recovery from the pandemic. We have joining us on the show now Professor Emeritus Dr. Barjoyai Bardai. He is from University Tun Abdul Razak. Professor Barjoyai, can I ask you what you make of these calls? You know, these calls to allow for yet another EPF withdrawal. Many of the proponents of this proposal, they say that, well, you know, it is their money, it is their savings after all. What do you make of it?
Okay, thank you, Cik Malisa. Actually, based on legitimacy, all members have their every right to withdraw. And it is provided for. And actually, we changed the act in 2019 and 2020 to allow member to withdraw for to supplement their income when they needed it. But let me go into the philosophical aspect. I think if we look at EPF, EPF is one of the best heritage that we have from being member of the parliament countries. And we have established EPF in 1951 before India. And now EPF is one of the biggest pension fund in the world with over 14 million members and over 1 trillion fund managed. And we are the envy of many fund managers for the ability of our national institution to manage fund. And actually, if you read carefully the EPF thing, they have the mission of making every members a millionaire when they retire. And so they have a provision there. They say that if you achieve the 1 million before your retirement age, you can withdraw all your money because they achieve their mission. And that, to me, is a real social protection mechanism that we have already operating for over 70 years.
But is it really benefiting everybody? We look at the recent statistics on, you know, how much people have in their savings, and then after these 2 years and those schemes to allow contributors to withdraw, you know, millions are left with less than 1,000 and in their savings, and unlikely to ever get to even the levels that EPF says is necessary for them to retire on, you know, with reasonable comfort. So is the system actually failing now?
Yeah, the system failed because in 2007, we amended the law and we allow, we actually created account two and allow members to withdraw. That was the first time that the EPF allowed members to withdraw, and that's the fall of the government. And when they start withdrawing, they withdraw to buy house, they withdraw to invest in unit trust and other thing, and they never return back the money. So in the end, the low income group will leave 3.7 million low income group have only 1,000 less than 1,000 balance. 6.1 million has less than 10,000 balance. So of course these are the group that unfortunately will end up with less than even 250,000. When they retire. So we need to try to recover them, help them somewhere, but we need to keep this this mission. I think EPF has generated millions of millionaires. I remember when I started work, we started work at 500 ringgit a month, and a few of my colleagues opted to go on an EPF rather than the pension fund. And when they retire, they each have over 2 million EPF saving, started with 500 ringgit. Of course, I was on pension fund, so I cannot dream to become a millionaire.
Okay, but you have, Professor, you have made the argument that EPF actually caters more to the middle income, to the high income earners. And these are the people who contribute to EPF. There's an entire segment of society that is not captured within EPF, that does not contribute to EPF. Can we talk a little bit about that? Because I know you've made some proposals. You've called for a new type of social security, saying that EPF may not cater to every segment of the working society.
All right. Okay. Actually, we could always create another institution like what Norway does when they discover oil. They created the oil trust fund, and they grow the fund. Today is worth over 10 trillion, and they guarantee that every citizen will have a house. So in Norway, every citizen is a millionaire. So we could do the same. We can create an institution like that, but we could also beef up EPF, because EPF is already there and established, and all we need to do is to expand the scope of EPF. We could allow individual other than formal employees to contribute. Actually, of course, if it is an individual, they may have to contribute more to achieve. Actually, my simulation show that if you start with 2,500 ringgit at the age of 25, by the time you're 58 years old, you reach the 1 million target.
Yeah. Prof, is there another problem? And, you know, now a guest on the show earlier pointed this out, which is that Malaysia is beset with low wages. We have, wage suppression, some people call it, or just the structure of our economy hasn't raised incomes for a large segment of society. Isn't that at the heart of the problem? You can deduct money from people's incomes, but if their incomes are low, then those deductions are never going to amount to something substantial by the time they retire.
Yes, I agree with you, Sirat. But based on the lowest income of 2,000, actually, with 2,000, you can also become a millionaire, but it takes longer time. Eh? But why our income is low in Malaysia is because of course, the employer say that it is the productivity is the problem. So we need to improve productivity so that the employees are justified higher income. But of course, we can also say the employer are also at fault because they do not invest enough in technology. When they invest enough in technology, the employees will learn new skill and they will automatically be upgraded and they will become a skilled worker rather than unskilled worker right now, for example. This need another avenue for deep discussion, I think.
That's right. Yes, it is. It definitely is a big conversation to have. But I just want to come back to, when you talk about EPF, a lot of the savings is for long term. We're thinking about retirement savings sufficiency. But when a crisis hits, you require immediate financial relief. And a lot of, the argument of allowing to dip into EPF savings is that, well, that's for the long term. We need some short term relief. Maybe financial aid from the government is not enough. We've seen with the floods, 1,000 ringgit, 1,005 ringgit is often not enough to help with rebuilding after such devastation. Can I ask you what you think social security measures are necessary when a crisis hits, and how long that should be? Because rather than relying on some EPF or a pension or a retirement fund, what are the mechanisms can there be?
Okay, first of all, if we have EPF, our retirement income is sorted out, then we need the health insurance, we need some emergency insurance for disaster, we need education insurance, we need housing insurance. So all this can be taken care actually by EPF if they can expand their scope. But other than that, we need another institution which is to cater for the needy group in the society. And we could create this using an endowment scheme. For example, the Muslim, we have the Wakaf system. And the Wakaf system will actually allow all of us to deposit fund in the Wakaf bank. Right now, for example, Bank Muamalah is offering this scheme for private wakaf endowment scheme, where you can actually create this wakaf and you invest. The benefit partly will go to you and your family, and partly will go into this pool fund that can help the poor group. Our problem is our poor group in the society is growing. The poverty level has been adjusted to 2,208 ringgit. However, there are still some government servants that are earning less than the poverty level, which is absurd. I mean, in essence, the government is encouraging poverty by paying them less than the poverty level. we need to change that, and the private sector must follow. They must pay at least anything above the poverty level. Then we can control the poverty, and we then help the poor group in the society through these mechanisms of Wakaf and endowment fund.
Right. Professor, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. Appreciate your time. That was our conversation with Professor Emeritus Dr. Barjoya Bardai from University Tun Abdul Razak. And that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.
Good night.